Hello, welcome to Pod Bless Texas. I'm Lillian Salerno, and here with my partner in crime, Kendall Scudder.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Excited to be here, but we are not in our world-class studios. We are in our individual homes trying to make a podcast. Yay!
Lillian is in McKinney, Texas, and I am in Dallas, Texas.
Yes, they might as well be on different sides of the state.
They might as well. How's the Rona been treating you, Lillian?
Well, I read the numbers. I follow a few people that I think know things. And I think it's certainly been interesting. I just can't believe that we were so ill-equipped for it. But anyway, there we go. But I do think it just shows how we are one climate problem, one epidemic, one everything from people just falling off the charts of poverty and no health care. And we have got to rebuild our institutions in this country. We have an obligation. Yeah. So anyway, it just makes me sad because I sort of knew this was happening for a long time. But anyway, so.
Well, I mean, it feels like it's kind of starting to wrap up. Do you think that we're making a mistake by wrapping it up so soon?
I think that every state has a different issue. And so I am somebody that thinks, you know, it would be nice to have some federal leadership. It'd be nice to be able to believe the administration. It'd be nice to be able to turn on the TV and feel better about things. That's just not where we live right now. So I'm hoping that places, even in Texas, where we have a Republican governor, who's not the worst governor we have ever had, but certainly not the best, I hope that they consider the public health experts that are advising them and, you know, do the right thing. But I do think it's okay to open up certain populations, but I think people have got to get used to the new norm of wearing masks out and trying to protect people that are vulnerable. But when you look at the numbers, there's still quite a few people that are being infected that are getting sick that do have an underlying symptom. Whether it's be diabetes, obesity, some underlying cause or being older. So that makes it so people do need to make decisions about opening the economy. So I'm not somebody who's like all in that we have to keep like this for the next 3 months. I just think there's risks involved, but I think it warrants doing a little bit of opening up. Everybody agrees with me.
I don't know enough about it to have an opinion on it, honestly, but it seems a little bit early, but that's fine. I'll trust your judgment.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is, you know, you can't go gangbusters. I mean, I do think people, you know, have their pod of people. You've been in my pod, and I have about 7 people in my pod of people that I've seen, and then I've been to a grocery store, you've been to a grocery store. We're pretty healthy. We're doing everything we can. I think that there has to be some ways for us to contact trace, and I don't see any plan forward from the state of Texas. I sometimes think that if that could be combined with, you know, census or the voter registration, I mean, there's all kinds of ways for us to get through this. And I think by opening it up, maybe smarter people than certainly me will realize that that opening up also requires contact tracing and all the other things, because we have done nothing like that here in Texas. And it costs a shit ton of money to do those kind of things. Massachusetts is doing it. Virginia's doing it. Maryland's doing it. Texas, we don't have a plan yet. And just when I used to work in public health for developing countries, that's how we got rid of polio, was contact tracing. That's how we started looking at the AIDS crisis. I mean, you have to know where people were so you can isolate people. Texas, I just have trouble seeing them be forward thinkers on that. So that part does worry me. So anyway, so excited about our guest today.
Who's our guest today, Lillian?
Dr. Elise Markowitz, the candidate from House District 28 that had to go through a special election, which she unfortunately lost, but she's was this her third race? Let's see. She ran.
Well, she ran for the state house, or no, sorry, she ran for the state board of education in 2018, right. And then she ran for the state house. Had to do this special election. She won the runoff, she won the election, lost the runoff. So she's lost twice, won once, and now she's going into an election in November because she is the Democratic nominee. So we talked to her about what it's like recouping after the special election, and she's a doctor of education. So we got some really good insight from her about best practices of homeschooling your kids and how to kind of navigate this crisis.
Yeah. No, I think it's important.
We also learned what kind of cheap Moscato she drinks.
Yes, she does. You and her. All right. So before we start, we have to do what we always do, which is hit the headlines. First headline, Texas Governor Greg Abbott announces team to restart the economy and loosen some restrictions.
So this morning, Greg Abbott gave a press conference. He said that phase one would be allowing orders for product pickup at retail stores so that you can't go into the store, but you can go and they can deliver things out to you. Another one of his orders would allow a limited amount of non-essential surgeries at hospitals.
I was surprised about that one. Yeah, that one. I think, yeah, I mean, if they're elective surgeries, I mean, if there's somebody who discovered they have, you know, pancreatic cancer or something and they need, you know, surgeries, yes. But for elective surgeries, like elective surgeries, not, I don't think they should be bringing anyone else into these hospitals right now.
Anyway. But I think things like a hip replacement surgery is considered an elective surgery, you know. Mm. Living with a broken hip isn't ideal. So like,
yeah,
I think
no, for sure.
how we
for sure.
maybe the issue is how we define elective. Like right. I think maybe a nose job is a little bit different.
Right. Botox surgery probably shouldn't be included.
Is surgery right now, Lillian?
No, I mean, it's not my jam, but I know other people do it. But sometimes I think when you get your face done, you have to have gond, or I don't know. I'm sure it'll happen in my own life one day, but I just don't think anybody should go into hospitals unless they're absolutely needed right now. Just protect our workers.
When you do that Botox injection stuff, can we do a special Pod Bless episode seeing how it goes for you?
No, that will not be happening. The chances of me doing it are not very good. All right. And then the other part.
The third is to open state parks until Monday. Texas schools are going to remain closed for the remainder of the school year. Face coverings are going to be mandatory in San Antonio and Dallas. And Texas has administered 169,536 tests. Sounds like a lot. It's actually way less by the population than most states. 17,371 have tested positive. 428 people have died.
Yep. Just, you know, in part of my, you know, evaluation of this opening up is the fact that we also lose, you know, 1.8 million people in this country every year for suicide. We lose 60,000 for cars. We have, you know, it's just a relationship of science versus non-science. And I just don't know if these numbers dictate these 428 deaths, the complete closure of the economy when we need to do hard things right now. And one of the hard things is realizing, I mean, we lose 650,000 people in this country because of our crappy diets associated with heart disease. We lose people that are diabetics because of our food supply. And we can't even do the hard things of having children not be marketed to by crappy food companies. So we can't even do that. And then for 428 deaths, we've shut down the economy. It's just relationship-wise, we just need to be smarter.
Do you think it's fair to conflate those two? Because I don't. I think that a bunch of car accidents is nothing like a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And if, I mean, it doesn't translate from person to person. And so this could be a much larger number if precautions hadn't been taken.
Oh, no, we have to do it. I just thinking when you look at the numbers, we just don't base our entire health system on science. All of a sudden, we're getting around to it because it's transmittable by anyone. And I just think we might as well go ahead and do the hard work now and fix a lot of these things since we have already taken this turn. So, and that means making it so people can get healthcare. I mean, poor people are dying because they don't have a healthcare system that, you know, allows them to get their insulin. I mean, there's just all kinds of, when you look at the numbers of who's dying, it's just terribly sad. You know, you don't have a lot of millionaires dying. That's what I think. Anyway, next headline, White House taps five Texans for the task force to reopen the economy. Gentlemen. Oh, let me guess. All men? No. Four men and a woman. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the Trump administration has appointed a task force to reopen the American economy, whatever that means. They have put Senator Cornyn, Senator Cruz, so both senators from Texas on that committee, Representative Kay Granger, who is a rep from Fort Worth, Representative Brady, who's a rep from the Woodlands, and Democrat Representative Henry Cuellar, who narrowly defeated Jessica Cisneros, friend of the podcast, Democrat that is well known for being a best friend of the Republicans. He is on that committee with them. So anyways, I'm glad to have a Democrat on the committee. You know, that's
surprising, really. Yeah. And next headline, Texas is running out of money to pay.
You're just what? Done with that. You don't want to talk about it at all.
Well, I mean, is there anything to talk about? They none of them know what they're doing. Okay. They're just waiting.
Fine, keep going.
What do you think they're going to do?
Keep going.
All they've been is anointed to be on a committee that has 4,000 people on it. They've also put from the business community, they've put Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Mavericks, Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys. They put a host of folks. I mean, he's pretty much added everybody but everybody in the kitchen sink. So, anyway.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Next. No, go ahead.
All right. Next headline. Texas is running out of money to pay unemployment benefits. People will still get paid, but businesses may see tax hikes as a result.
So officials have said that the state will run out of money in the unemployment fund in May or June. There are other experts that predict that it may happen within the next 3 weeks. Texas Workforce Commission has paid out more than $400 million in benefits so far, and they're expected to pay hundreds of millions of dollars more based on the mounting claims. Unemployment benefits are paid out of the state's Unemployment Insurance Compensation Trust Fund, which is funded by unemployment insurance taxes and payroll taxes that are paid by businesses. What we're finding is that there were only four states in the United States who were worse equipped to handle the unemployment epidemic in a recession than Texas.
And a lot of that has to do with their just infrastructure, IT infrastructure. I did read one thing that was positive that...
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with not having money there, but some of it is the IT infrastructure.
Money or IT or staff. I do appreciate some of the legislators have been sending over their own people to work the phone lines and stuff. So
I read a piece about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, both on the Republican and the Democratic side in the state house. Yeah. So, all right. Well, next headline. Go ahead.
Running through this today. Well, there are a bunch of people that, are really struggling with trying to get access to unemployment. Mm-hmm. No one needs it more than now, right? And
right.
So it's so frustrating that the state's mm-hmm. so poorly equipped for that.
Yeah. All right. Next headline. Texas judge will issue order that could greatly expand mail-in voting. That would be awesome.
It would be great. A state district judge out of Austin said Wednesday that he'll issue a temporary injunction expanding who can qualify for absentee ballots for the upcoming election. The Republicans are pissed. They're going to try to appeal it. Republicans don't want to expand access to voting, so they are going to do their best to make sure that this doesn't pass. But it's a very interesting thing that we're watching right now in Texas. Wouldn't it be great for you to be able to vote by mail, though?
Absolutely. All day and twice on Tuesdays. No, it would be, it just makes so much sense. I also, does that mean I won't have to work the polls anymore? for the early voting and everything, will you still, will candidates still have to have representatives? Because I feel like that'd be nice to avoid that part.
So, yeah, staffing polling places and poll greeting would be effectively eliminated if we went entirely vote
by nobody ballot. Thinks like, this is going to happen, right? Nobody thinks
here's
this is
going to
happen. No. Okay.
What sure. I anticipate is that it's going to be appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is going to overturn it. And then we're going to have business as usual, unfortunately. Yeah. Fun fact, I was looking into the judge that actually made this order. He's a Democrat out of Travis County, and he actually lost his primary this year.
Wow.
It was like a nail biter election that was skin of his teeth, and so he actually is finishing his last term as a judge for now. So he kind of has nothing left to lose.
Wow, I love that. I love exiting judges when they're on our side. All right, next headline, MJ Hager far outpaces Royce West in the U.S. Senate fundraising for John Cornyn's seat. How's that going?
Well, here's how it's going. In the race for the United States Senate from Texas, John Cornyn in the last cycle raised $2.7 million and has $12.9 million cash on hand. That's massive. It's going to be very hard to ever overcome that. However, the Democrats that are running, they have a runoff. There are two. It is MJ Hager and Royce West, Senator Royce West. Lillian, would you like to get those children out of your room right quick?
Yes, I would. Hold on. You guys, I'm going to be down. Go downstairs, count for 100 seconds, and I'll be down.
We're not cutting this down.
I'll be down there now. Or just stay right there. Read the bug book. I'll be right there.
Read the bug book.
I'm coming. Read the bug book. I found there's a great book on bugs here. And I'm always... Yes.
There are two Democrats that are in the race that are running. MJ Hager and Senator Royce West. MJ Hager vastly outraising Senator West. Raised $1.6 million in this quarter, the first 3 months of the year, has $1.1 million cash on hand, while Royce West raised $407,000 and has $121,000 cash on hand. What the fuck do you make of that, Lil?
Well, I mean, $407,000 isn't terrible. It's just in comparison to her, it's terrible. But I mean,
for the United States Senate?
Well, no, it's not good.
There are people who are running for Congress that raise more money than that.
Oh, yeah, lots of them. Yeah, all the ones in Texas. Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. It's just, I guess my focus is on the 12.9 million cash on hand for Cornyn versus Hager. I mean, and then 121,000 cash on hand for Royce. I mean, this is not good. I mean, it's, I don't know. I just wish we could get somebody out, get a seat held by a Democrat here in Texas.
Well,
I'd do anything.
What I think is the most interesting about it is that Royce West, I've said this before, I like Royce. He's a friend of mine. But Royce West's whole selling point is that he's an incumbent who has stature, who's been in the Senate for 30 years, and he's the best to go against John Cornyn. Imagine being a sitting senator and being outraised by someone who's never held public office before like this. I mean, it's strange.
And well, part
he's
of it.
Got but to he, step his game up.
Yeah, but he also, part of her MJ is because she did run. She has a Rolodex. She went viral. So she had something to work from. I'm saying he just never really had to run a campaign for 30 years. So here we are. And so his Rolodex obviously is expansive. I can't imagine who has the forcefulness to force Senator West to sit down and do 8 hours call time. I just don't know who that person is.
I mean, imagine, like, I don't even have a side in that race. If Royce West called me and asked me for money, I'd have a really hard time saying no. And I feel like Royce has this real opportunity and he's just shitting it away right now. Am I the only one that feels like that?
Well, I mean, he has amazing name recognition, and I mean, he also has the African American vote. I mean, and so much of this race is going to be about turnout. So that's
he was a Texas senator since I've been born. He's been a Texas senator, and he was on the floor with Wendy Davis during her filibuster. And you're telling me he can't raise money right now? I mean, maybe it's not about Royce West. Maybe people should start questioning who his campaign team is. Because whoever's running his campaign, if you can't raise money for somebody like Royce West, why are you even in this business?
All right. Well, that's good to know.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, no one can force the candidate to make calls. I'm just saying that
that's true. That's true. But we don't
know. You're saying if he calls
it's
you.
Very strange.
Maybe he's going to do, you know, fourth quarter Hail Mary and going to raise a ton or have a viral video himself or get some big endorsements.
You're a donor. Let's say Royce West calls you. Can you tell Royce West no?
No. I would give him money.
Right.
He hasn't called me.
He's one of the most powerful Democrats in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that he can't, like, his advantage is that he can call and ask people for money while still holding public office. And he will hold public office regardless of how this election goes. People would give him money if he called them. And he's just not doing it. Mm-hmm. Or maybe he is, and they're setting up to the wrong people. I don't know. But this is not, that is weird. To be outraised $1.2 million by someone who's never even held public office before? I don't know. There's something weird there. Either he's just half-assing it, or I don't understand it. It's beyond me right now. But what a disappointing campaign at this time.
All right. And that was Hit the Headline. And when we come back, we'll have Dr. Elise Markowitz joining us. We're so excited.
Stick around!
Welcome back to Pod Bless Texas. We're so excited to have Dr. Elise Markowitz with us today, who is going to be the next representative from House District 28 for the state of Texas. Woo! And she's here to tell us how it's going in the virtual campaign world of not being able to go and go to meet and greets and talk to voters and how she's going to win and what we can do to help her. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me again, Gal. Always good to see you guys in the Pod Bless Texas family. Great times. Yeah, and so as you said, everything about campaigning changed dramatically towards mid-February and has maintained that trend through today. We don't know when things are going to actually go back to a new normal. I'm hesitant to say things are ever going to go back to normal. And quite frankly, I don't think they should, because I think this coronavirus pandemic has really exposed major flaws in the system that we currently have. Right now, we see that our unemployment system doesn't have the capacity to serve those in need. Our healthcare system doesn't have the capacity to serve every American. Our education system wasn't ready for a pandemic of these epic proportions that has essentially closed down our public school systems and our higher education systems and made everything virtual. So I think we have a lot of things that we have to reckon with. And hopefully when we get to the 87th legislature, myself and all the other Democrats who are looking to change the system will be able to get in there and make these positive changes.
Now, when we last saw Dr. Elise Markowitz, we went down to Katy, Texas and did a special episode in your district before the special election in January, where you were not successful. Unfortunately, you were successful, but you didn't win. I guess we could say it that way. How have you rebounded since then? And what did you learn from your weird special election?
So the first thing I learned is that, as you said, special elections sure are weird. So we were able to increase turnout from the special election to the runoff, which is generally unheard of. Our special election had more voters in than any other special election in Texas history, which is really cool. And we were able to build up momentum in a district that is traditionally not very Democratic, right? And so hopefully that momentum is going to continue. Obviously, we've had to tweak the way we campaign. As you said, Lil, we can't go to meet and greets. We're not doing fundraisers. I've put a hiatus on call time because, quite frankly, I think it's tasteless for us to be reaching out to people in the middle of a crisis, begging for money for an election.
But Eliz, how will we pay all of the consultants?
You such a valid point. How will people get paid? So for every listener out there who wants to help our campaign and hasn't been affected by COVID-19, please go to www.eliz4tx.com, press that donate button, and send me a stimulus check. Because
or two.
Or two stimulus.
Have you started, like, just because of the crisis and you've got so much goodwill in that area, are you going ahead and playing the role of the person that people are reaching out to? Because it seems like you've got that personality where you're like directing people to food banks and jobs and unemployment, because the current guy running that has that position, not so much.
Yeah, so what we've done is we've essentially stopped the actual campaigning part of our campaign, and we've turned it into more of a public service messaging part. So we've sent out a series of emails. One was focused on the health aspects of COVID. One was focused on the mental health aspects of COVID, the upward domestic violence, because unfortunately, since the staying at home mandates have been put in place, there's been a huge uptick in domestic violence. And so we want to make sure that people have those resources available to them. We've also put out emails with information for individuals who have small businesses so that they can apply for the small business loans, for the utility district so they can make sure their utilities aren't getting cut off, and just essentially making sure that people are able to sustain day-to-day operations in life during this time. Because as we know, at least 20% of Texans have been cut off from any income. And the paycheck payback program has now run out of money. So how are the individuals who have been facing unemployment, how are they actually going to sustain themselves? We have Steve Mnuchin over there saying this $1,200 check will last families 10 weeks, but I'm not sure how that is even possible. There's a complete unknown with real people's lives when it comes to these higher ups and the administration.
I know you're close to Houston, and we're close to Dallas, but I was driving from Dallas to Collin County today, and I noticed and called a friend of mine at Bank of America. There was lines so that they, at three locations, they had to have police coordinate lines going through the drive-thru at these banks because people can't get anyone on the phone about their payroll protection plan, nor can they get anyone phone to delay things, nor are there URLs that help. I mean, I'm not blaming the big banks, though I normally do, but I mean, there's just such an opportunity for people to have ombuds people that could help during this crisis. And I think good legislators are those people, like you will be legislators. And I think those who do that during this time are the ones that are, you know, going to get, that's the leadership we need. But man, some of these current state reps are not doing anything for their constituents during this.
Well, my state rep did hand out two pairs of gloves and a bottle of bleach to anyone who wanted them.
On that one day and during this? Wow.
I mean, just saying, that is a public service. Cool.
Gee, what a hero.
Well, you know, I think that there are a ton of people who've lost their jobs. We talked about that earlier in the show with the unemployment rate in the state, and how Texas does not have the capacity to have this many people on unemployment. But, you know, there's another side of this that I know that people are going to be a little perturbed that this is a focus of mine, but there are a lot of businesses that are struggling right now. And I'm not talking about the Walmarts of the world. They're going to be just fine. I'm talking about, you know, your local neighborhood dance studio or like your little neighborhood brewery that you have. Like, those guys are having a really hard time. And so I've taken it upon myself during the coronavirus to try to shift my buying purchases local, because I think that that's a long-term habit that I can instill in myself. Have you seen local businesses in your community struggling? And what do you propose we do to try to help those small businesses in your community as they try to recover from this crisis?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of small businesses, whether it's restaurants, whether it's nail salons, hair salons, crafting stores, all these types of things. And quite frankly, I think we would be fooling ourselves if we said that all of them are going to be able to reopen successfully. I think that if you're able to and you're not struggling otherwise, that it would be a kind gesture to purchase a gift card for these establishments so that they can have the money now and you can reap the reward later. If you feel so inclined, you can order takeout or get the curbside pickup of your favorite restaurant. Again, as Kendall said, it's not the Walmarts or the McDonald's or the Chili's of the world that are going to be in danger, but it's these small mom and pop restaurants. I know that there's one restaurant in the Katy area called, maybe I shouldn't say it, but either
Katy
way,
restaurant.
Like this Katy restaurant, that instead of selling meals, they're putting together bags of vegetables and meat and eggs and saying, hey, you can pick up this daily harvest bag for $20.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's a really great way to keep your business afloat. I know that other restaurants are doing Zoom wine tastings, which I think is kind of cool. So go by and pick up your four bottles of wine, and then everybody who signed up gets together on Zoom and does the same type of thing. And so it's still allowing for those social bonds and allowing those restaurants and businesses to still thrive.
There's something that's kind of beautiful about that American innovation. That, I mean, that was kind of this principle behind our economy when it first started, that like American ingenuity, that we would adapt in situations like that. And what we're seeing is that our local businesses they're the ones that are helping folks that are going through hard times while also trying to keep their own businesses open and come up with cool little ideas like that. You don't see that kind of innovation from Target. You don't see that kind of innovation from these big box stores. And so in a way, it's this beautiful spotlight on American innovation, if that makes any sense.
Right. And I think there's also this spotlight, and I don't know on your district, I'm trying to think of the map of your district, but if you had any rural in there, maybe not, but a little bit, right? But there's such a, you know, there's been four different op-ed pieces and studies and papers printed in the last, couple of weeks about rural America, which everybody forgets about, because, you know, this COVID-19 crisis has really made it so people are recognizing having sparsely populated areas during a pandemic like this is good. And we need to make sure they have the resources to recover also. So anyway, really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
One of my favorite breweries, I'm not paid to say this, but one of my favorite breweries in my neighborhood is Lakewood Brewery. And they've been doing really neat drive-through stuff where you can go by and pick up and purchase from them. So that's what I've been doing in my pandemic time. I have been drinking a whole lot more. And so today I'm drinking one of my French Quarter Temptresses from Lakewood. Have y'all found yourselves drinking more during this? And if so, where are you choosing to take?
Golly. Go ahead, Liz.
I mean, I don't think I've become a lush since the pandemic.
Not that makes one of us.
Yes, that makes one of us. I'm not the person who's getting specs delivered to my door or anything, so can't sign on to that one. But I did have a shot of apple vodka the other night, which, you know, tingled the taste buds a little.
Well, I
how
have.
How about you, Lillian? How about you, know, Lillian? Have you been drinking?
I've tried to moderate, but I have not been successful.
Really? Have you part been of it, successful, Lillian?
I have not been successful on the moderation part, but I'm aspiring. I have been walking my 10,000 steps a day and thinking that would like make it so I wouldn't drink at night. And that's actually had the reverse.
That's not what this is about, Lillian. That's not what this is about, Lillian. This is about you stealing 3 bottles of wine from my house yesterday. That's what this is about.
Stealing is not what happened. Kendall has a very small wine chiller that I don't even know why it's there. I don't know if it comes with the apartment or he brings it around. I have no idea. I don't have a wine chiller. But anyway,
how small is it?
It's very small. And
no,
it's, so,
it's like the size of a, it's like a little
mini fridge. Right.
But
I mean, I have the 8 wine bottle chiller. I think that's really good.
Okay, but anyway, Kendall really doesn't drink wine, and so
Lillian needs a much larger full-size refrigerator to chill all of her wine.
Anyway, I drink a lot of, if I drink wine in the summer, which I feel like this is the summer, I'm going to drink white wine, and I made a French dish, so I wanted a rosé or a white wine, and I feel like anytime I don't go to the grocery store is good for everybody, just because you don't want to go to the grocery store, so I was at Kendall's place doing work, and then I said, oh, I'm so sorry, I got to stop. And then he said, oh, we'll just grab one out of my wine, whatever that device was, those mini fridge that says it's a wine chiller. And I looked through, and I mean, it had some really crappy white wines in there. And I'm like, you understand you can't have these forever. They don't get better. White wine doesn't get better. You got to drink it. Red wine gets better with age, but white wine, you don't leave it in there for years and years, which is true.
Seriously?
Yeah, Lillian says, you had some real crappy wines in here. I better take them off your hands.
So
I don't want anything to go wrong with you, Kendall. So as a public.
Exactly. So that's what happened. And one was a bottle of Fetzer, which is way too sweet to drink, you know, as an adult, unless you're going to have some dessert or something. But I took that one. I took a rosé that wasn't terrible, but it was a cheapy wine also, but at least it was from France. And then the other one was just dreadful. But anyway, he was going to keep those.
I'm sorry, Lillian. What budget do you think I have that when I move into this apartment and there's a wine fridge in it, I'm going to go to the store and get all the top shelf wines to store in there in the event that someone comes to my house who drinks wine?
Well, I mean, the kind of young women that you date, I guess, want like so sweet wine and Moscato or something. But I'm telling you, that's what's turning them off.
No, Moscato is my favorite wine.
Well, not cheap Moscato. And I don't think you're one of the women.
Moscato in that blue bottle. Like $8.99 or something. It has a sun on it.
Yeah, that's it. Well, then you would feel fine
like
after.
Take a vote. It sounds like we should take a vote. Who all thinks Lillian's a total slut snob right now?
Did you say slut and you meant snob?
I said snob.
Oh, okay. Because that's not very nice.
I did not say that.
All right. Well, anyway.
I just wanted to go on a tirade about Lillian stealing my shit. Sorry. Sorry, Liz.
No.
I know it's a good use of your time.
Well, now that I know she's not doing call time, I feel good. But you're doing like wellness checks with your constituents and stuff like that.
We've been doing that. But I just think it's a really hard thing to do, right? You call these people up, hey, how are you doing? I know this is absolutely crazy. oh yeah, no, we have to, we're homeschooling our kids and my husband's been furloughed and I'm working full time, and then say, yeah, no, that's really terrible. Do you think you can donate $50?
I know. It's like, just terrible. No. I know people are doing it because I've gotten calls, but I feel terrible for them. I feel terrible for the situation.
So do you donate when they ask?
I feel like if they had to call me, that means they probably need, yeah, I do.
Oh, man.
I do.
You but I'm also. My call on Monday, Lou.
Okay, put me on your call list. Yeah. I'm not saying I donate like I would in normal times because, you know, we're all affected by it. But yeah, I feel just terrible for the situation because I know how hard it is being a candidate. And this is not pretty, being a candidate in these times.
I mean, I think that what the average Joe doesn't know about or being Jane. A candidate.
Or Jane.
The average, I'm sorry, why can't a woman be named Joe?
Like Joanna.
There are a ton of Joes that I know, probably more
Joe or Jane. Okay.
Than male.
All right. So go ahead. The average Joe
who is paying attention to all of this may not realize that when you're a candidate, you need money to operate your race, but that's not always your driving factor for why you're making your calls. A lot of times you're making your calls because you have people breathing down your throat, whether it's like powers that be in Austin or in DC that are telling you, if you don't raise X amount of dollars, we aren't going to help you later. And so a lot of these candidates, they need your money to operate their campaign, but they're also just like, they're terrified that if they don't beg people for money in the middle of a crisis, the party isn't going to come in and help them later.
Yeah, and I hate that so much. That's true.
A real shitty place to put our candidates in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I concur.
I know you had that. I mean, I know it's like you have to cross this pit of fire to get to the other side. And then sometimes you cross the pit of fire, do everything they say, and they're like, not so much. I'm not on your team anyway.
That was a really good try, but I've changed my mind.
Okay, really, let me get serious for just a second, Eliz, while we have you. Because you are Dr. Eliz Markowitz. You have your doctorate in education. You have dedicated your life to public schools and improving the American education system. The coronavirus has made it difficult for families because they're having to homeschool their kiddos right now, right? What advice do you have to folks in your district or around Texas who are struggling to juggle their full-time job and educate their kids at home?
My biggest piece of advice would be to not stress about it. Just let your kids survive through this crisis. Everyone's worried about loss of learning and, oh my gosh, if we don't have these 2 or 3 months of school, my kid's going to be so far behind in the greater scheme of things. And quite frankly, it's just not true. From this period of time in Texas public schools till the end of the year, normally we'd be doing drill and kill first the star test anyway. on some great experiential learning at this point. And I think that this entire situation is a learning experience in and of itself. It's going to teach students about what happens in a national and world pandemic, which is something we've never seen. It's going to teach them new technologies that they're going to discover because they can't go anywhere. It's going to teach people new ways of being empathetic and sympathetic because they're going to have to reach out to their friends and family in alternative ways and to check in on them. It's going to also be very character molding as we deal with the increasing death rate and infection rate. And this is something that I truly think is going to affect our children for the rest of their lives. I think this is their defining moment. This is their Cuban missile crisis. This is their Vietnam War. This is their 9/11. And now this is what they're going to remember. But I think worrying about completing worksheets that are mandated by the 10th grade teacher on biochemistry formulas shouldn't be our top concern at this point, because everything's going to work out. Everybody's in the same situation. So nobody's going to be penalized. So I don't think we should be freaking out about our kids becoming dumb during this crisis, but rather be focusing more on their emotional growth and well-being.
I totally agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a friend of mine's kid that's in private school, she called me the other day, and she has a five-year-old, and she's like, I can't believe they asked me to have my five-year-old do a PowerPoint for the Zoom. She goes, I drew the line. I said, no PowerPoint.
A five-year-old doing a PowerPoint?
Because, you know, just this idea of just keeping these kids. And I'm like, let that kid play out in the yard. And yeah. He doesn't need to be online all the time. But yeah, I've been watching it up close, staying with in my pod. I have small kids are in my pod and watching their families trying to keep up with their schooling and their full-time jobs and the angst. And it's something. It's really something. Well,
Dr. Eliz Markowitz, I just really appreciate you taking time out of your pandemic to spend with us. This is now your third visit on our podcast. You are broaching our most frequent guest spot. It's still held by State Representative Julie Johnson, but you're getting close.
Not for long, Julie.
Well, we really appreciate you taking time to join us today. But before you go, you have to play everyone's favorite segment. It's called Obsessed.
Okay.
Each of us are going to talk about one news story from the week, or there's politics, or wasn't it? You've been completely obsessed with. And as always, we have to start this segment with Lillian Salerno. Lillian, what's something this week that you've been completely obsessed with?
Well, I am obsessed with the public health experts versus the political folks in D.C. not being able to give a consistent message to the American people. And I try not to watch the press conferences, daily press conferences, because I think it just does something to my brain. But people have been texting me that I have to watch them because they want to know my take or something. And I just think we got to get to a place where people can rely on information. So I'm obsessed of people starting to act like grown-ups and take responsibility. And let's just start from here on out and just get this country what it needs to take care of. Vaccinating 330 million people is going to happen. Taking care of those people that are sick is going to be having to happen. Helping small business is going to happen. And let's just do the work instead of all the posturing. And I mean, Republicans, this administration, certainly not my fave, but I think the Democrats also just have to lead now also. So that's my obsess.
Do you feel that the Democrats have been leading sufficiently?
No. I do not.
Why?
I don't. I mean, I know it's a wrestling match up there. I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like I like where AOC comes, where she's coming in on these things about, you know, I mean, we needed to pass that $2 trillion, but I mean, so much of that money is not getting to the people that need it. And I just think that we need to have some younger and different voices than just Speaker Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. I just think that there's more people that have to get together with Republicans and make some alliances. And we're just not seeing enough of that. So that's how I feel about it. But that's me.
Great upset, Lillian Salerno. Great.
Right.
Dr. Eliz Markowitz, candidate for the Texas House in District 28. What's something this week that you've been completely obsessed with?
This week, I've been completely obsessed with ballot by mail voting for everybody.
Yay!
We know it's going to go back and be challenged again by the courts because that's what happens. But a district judge ruled on Thursday that the risk of voting in person and catching COVID was enough of a risk to one's health that everyone who wants one can apply for a vote by mail ballot. And I think that's great. I think that's incredible. I hope that the Texas Supreme Court does not overturn that ruling. And so people can vote safely instead of having to pull a Wisconsin.
That was just terrible.
Why do you think that Republicans are trying to stop mass vote by mail?
funny you should ask, because they've told me on Facebook they think that it's all going to come down to massive voter fraud, and that voting by mail is not secure, whereas voting by person is the only secure methodology. And so their concern was that Democrats will raise specters from the dead to go out to the polls and vote.
And their concern is because whenever vote by mail has been implemented in places around the country, places like Washington, Colorado, California, we've seen a significant surge in the number of Democrats that are elected and Democratic turnout, because the people who tend to vote by mail that wouldn't vote in person are people that work for a living and just don't have the ability to do it, but they can just stick something in a mailbox, right?
And there's been essentially no fraud.
The Republicans bring up voter fraud, my response is show me the data. And I've never been given any data. So
it's never been about data for them, Liz.
Right, exactly. So I'm obsessed with making sure that we get this vote by mail ability so that we don't have to, you know, potentially kill 20% of our population.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Good obsessed. Dr. Liz Markowitz, candidate for the Texas House in District 28. Good obsessed. My obsessed this week has been whiny little bitches. You know, where I'm from in East Texas, we're used to losing elections every now and then. Democrats used to do really well in East Texas. And then after 2010, it's been a bloodbath, guys. And so if you're a Democrat in rural America, you're used to losing an election and getting up, brushing yourself off, and keeping on fighting, right? This week, after we saw Bernie Sanders endorse Joe Biden, the Democratic primary effectively ended. And at this point, you would assume that everyone who is to the left of Donald Trump, which is like being to the left of Attila the Hun, would come together and do their best to make sure that Donald Trump is not the person that replaces Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court. But instead, my Twitter feed has been inundated with whiny little bitches that are sad that their candidate didn't win and how they just can't seem to move forward. And I'm over it, okay? Ultimately, what this should come down to you should have enough cognitive abilities to say Donald Trump is putting children in cages, right? Like, that should be enough. If Joe Biden and Donald Trump agreed on every issue except the issue of putting children in cages, that should be enough to get your ass out of your house and vote for Joe Biden. But there's so much more than that. Joe Biden is the most progressive nominee for president in American history. And the fact that people are throwing him under a bus because their person lost is just childish. Get over yourself, and your privilege is shown. It's absolutely ridiculous. I can't get over it. And so I've been completely obsessed with it this week. I can understand, you know, wanting Joe Biden to have different positions on different things. But ultimately, Joe Biden, every single day and twice on Tuesday, will be a better president than Donald Trump. And for you to sit on the sidelines or to try to throw people under the bus because you're sad that your candidate lost, it's irresponsible. And it shows that the progressive movement was never what was important to you. What was important to you was you being right. And I've been completely obsessed with it.
Ooh, that's a little harsh.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, the folks on the Twitter sphere that's one group. There were millions of young people, millions Latinas and Latinos, millions of folks around the country that are saddened because Bernie Sanders brought to the forefront and brought the entire party to where it needed to be, which is a $15 an hour minimum wage, healthcare for all. And so that is about sadness. I think that we're going to have to give them some time, but I and know And then it's going to be up to Joe Biden to make sure that he recognizes the importance of the movement, because it is a movement. And, you know, many of us are sad, not because I don't like Joe Biden, but because I worry that those ideas that need to be on the forefront more now than ever, seeing the entire health system fail us, those have got to come to the forefront. And who he brings as his vice president and who he puts in those positions in charge of agencies, or everybody's going to be looking. And he needs to, I think that group that you're referring to is much smaller.
I mean, people taking the time to be sad and to lick their wounds, but this Never Biden movement, or the ability to say, you know, well, I'm going to vote for Trump since Bernie didn't win. I don't understand how that is a viable or a logical path. If the goal really was to pass Bernie's ideas and get those ideas implemented, and Bernie's been working with Joe to make sure that Joe's platform is more aligned with Bernie's, then what's the question? Why are we even talking about this? It's obvious that we should just vote Joe. And it's fine to lick your wounds, but attacking the other candidate does absolutely nothing in terms of progress or unification.
Well, and Lillian, I want to be specific that I understand that there are people that are upset about it. That's not who I'm talking about. Like, of course you have a right to be upset when your candidate loses. I've lost many a times and I've been upset by it, right? I'm referring to the weird little contingency of crazy people that bounce around on Facebook and Twitter. I'm not talking about a regular person who's just kind of bummed about it, but they're ready to move on and do the right thing for the American public. I'm talking about the people, like Elise just said, that are Never Biden. What a joke. Mm-hmm. You're going to vote for Joe. I saw someone on Twitter tweeting that they're going to vote for Donald Trump to prove to the Democrats that Joe Biden can't win in November. So at that point, what you're saying is that it's more important for you to be right than it is to make sure that we're expanding healthcare to millions of Americans who don't have access to it, or making sure that we're reuniting families. I mean, like, there's all these huge issues and this contingency of people that are going, I kind of have to wonder how much of it's real and how much of it are Russian bot crazy people.
I sometimes think it is Russian bots. I mean, I don't know the stats on it, but certainly there was some in the last election. There were for sure bots trying to advance the idea of, you know, the Clinton versus Bernie piece. That was for sure. That's no joke. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that's some of that, but I don't have any evidence. But
yeah,
good obsessed.
To me, it's the folks that cannot accept the fact that they had a loss. Well, pull yourself up and get to work again, because that's what organizers like us have been doing for decades.
Yeah.
Whenever you lose, you get back up and you keep fighting, and you're going to move the needle. You know that because you've seen how much Bernie's moved it in just 4 years. Keep fighting. And that's what I've been obsessed with. And that was upset.
All right. Yay.
That you've been obsessed with, please make sure you send your video of 30 seconds or fewer to info@podblesstexas.com. We might play it on the next episode. info@podblesstexas.com.
Great. Well, Liz, we can't thank you enough for coming on the show today. This was our first time to do a show like this with all of us in different places, and we're really, it was good. So thanks for being patient with us.
Yeah, no, this was super fun. Thanks for having me on again. And I can't wait to come on next time to crush Representative Johnson's record.
And if people want to follow you and donate some money, since you're not bothering them.
Please donate all the money to Eliz4TX, E-L-I-Z, the number 4TX.com. Any support you guys can offer would be most appreciated as we go up against the self-funding multimillionaire once again in November.
Oh, God. So bad. That guy's so bad.
Well, if folks wanted to follow us on social media, they can find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, @PodBlessTexas. Lillian, where can people find you if they want to follow?
I'm on the Twitter sphere @Lillian_Salerno, and you can follow me through PodBlessTexas everywhere else.
Very cool. And if folks wanted to follow me, they can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, TikTok, at Kendall Scudder. And on behalf of myself and Lillian and the entire Pod Bless Texas team, y'all have a blessed week.